Hello, this is Kendra Brodeen of WomenLawyersOnline.com, and today I am thrilled to bring you Bonnie Eskenazi. Bonnie is one of the foremost entertainment litigators in Los Angeles, recently recognized by the Recorder as California's Entertainment Lawyer of the Year. Ms. Eskenazi represents plaintiffs and defendants in a variety of litigation matters, including entertainment, copyright, defamation, and general business disputes. Ms. Eskenazi is also listed on the Hollywood Reporter's list of power lawyers. She is named by the Los Angeles Daily Journal as one of California's top 75 women litigators, by the Los Angeles Business Journal as the best of the bar, by Los Angeles Magazine as a super lawyer, and by Chambers and Partners as one of America's leading business lawyers. Ms. Eskenazi also carries the highest peer review rating, AV, by Martindale Hubbell. Ms. Eskenazi is a trial lawyer and a civil litigator and also handles certain entertainment transactional work. She also lectures at Stanford and Harvard Law Schools. So welcome. Welcome to you. How are you, Bonnie?
I'm very well, thank you. And you, Kendra?
I am great. Thank you so much. Well, may I just call you Bonnie on the interview?
Of course. Of course, please.
Thanks. Although, as I said, I love saying your last name, but I'll call you Bonnie.
You're my guest.
All right, thank you. Well, let's just jump right into the questions, and then we can sort of meander around from there. The first of which is that I'd love to hear a little bit about your personal and professional background, especially thinking about whether or not you feel like balancing work and life, juggling that personal and professional is something that you've always done rather well, or if there feels like there was a pivotal point or time in your life or your career where you made a very conscious decision to do that in a better way, a way that served you in a better way.
Well, I would say that I was really god-awful at it at the beginning. I was really awful at life balance in college and in law school, and it only got worse once I went out into the workforce and worked at a private firm, which will suck up every minute of every day of your entire life, if you allow that to happen.
Right.
All under the banner of you want to succeed and you want to do better and you want to be perfect. And so I would say to you that when I first started working, it was a completely a work-oriented life for me. I was married at the time, and I still am, thank goodness, but my husband used to come meet me for dinner at work.
Oh,
he would, like, bring something from home. We'd sit and eat for an hour. He'd go home, and then I'd stay and work until midnight or so.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so there was no real balance in my life at the very beginning of this job.
Okay, and so was there a time since then that you have was there a defining moment, I guess I could say, that made you decide to do that in a different way, or was it just more of an evolution along the way?
Well, first of all, every year, I worked at my first firm for about 5 years until it exploded in the early 1990s, as many firms did. Mm-hmm. And every year for those first 5 years, I billed between 2,500 and 3,000 hours. And you can only bill that kind of time if you're working every day, every night, every weekend. Mm-hmm. For me, the question wasn't, was I going to work the weekend? The question was, did I have to work all day, every day for both of the weekend days? In fact, it was, my husband has a very good sense of humor, and he actually bought me a T-shirt at that time, which said something to the effect of, stress is what happens when your mind says no, but your mouth says, sure, I'd love to.
Oh, that's great. It's true.
Totally summed up my life. What happens when you're on that kind of a treadmill, which was relentless, you start getting physically exhausted, mentally exhausted. I mean, human beings are just not meant to work long-term under those kinds of conditions. You know, on the other hand, I have to say that because I was working so hard and really honing my skills, I got what I consider to be the best cases in the office all the time. I was able to litigate on the most interesting, exciting entertainment litigation cases, of anybody that I know to this day. I mean, I had a litany of cases, the likes of which you would not believe. And so I've had great experience. And, of course, I attributed that to the fact that I was as relentless in my work as the partners there were demanding that I be. Mm-hmm. So, it was on the one hand, very rewarding because I got great experience and on great cases and was doing exactly what I wanted to do in terms of the kinds of work that I was getting. But on the other hand, I was getting no sleep. I was newly married and hardly ever saw my husband. I had no life. And, you know, that really grates on you after a period of time. And what happened to me, I think, was, as I said, my firm blew up after the first 5 years that I was there. And it was a fairly well-established firm here in Los Angeles that did a lot of entertainment litigation as well as other things. And it just exploded. I was there on the last day. It closed its doors. And I thought to myself, okay, so now I've really dedicated 5 years of my life for what? Okay, I don't have a job. But for me, I was fairly fortunate because I had, again, I had made contacts because I was so fortunate enough to have worked so hard and gotten such great cases. I had made some really good contacts in the Los Angeles entertainment community and was able to easily transition to the job that I have now, which is at my firm, Greenberg Glusker, and I actually was recruited here even before my firm folded by Burt Fields, who's probably the most preeminent entertainment lawyer in the country. Anyway, so I had a place to jump to. But one of the things that happened when I was when I understood that my firm was going under was I started examining what did I really want out of this. I mean, I knew that the firm was going to explode and did, in fact, explode. And I interviewed with only a few firms because I knew that Greenberg Glusker was recruiting me and Burt really wanted me to come over here. And so I only interviewed with a couple of other firms here in Los Angeles. Both of those other firms are firms that, you know, like my old firm, really demanded an incredible number of hours from everybody. That was the norm. It wasn't anything extraordinary. And, you know, I just thought to myself, okay, I've done this for 5 years. My firm folded. Now I have to start all over again. So it's not like I even built up any goodwill. So I'm down at the bottom again. I'm going to come in new. And do I really want this? Do I really want to be doing this now for another 5 or 10 years just to get back to where I was in terms of reputation within the firm? And, you know, the answer was really no. Uh-huh. I just said, I want to work hard, but I actually want a life. And the thing that Greenberg Glusker as a firm has allowed me to do is to have both. I was very fortunate in that, you know, that Burt Fields was at a place where the partners as a whole really valued having a life. And so when they said that the target billables were $1,850, they really actually meant $1,850. They didn't mean $1,850, wink, wink. That really means $2,500.
Right.
They actually mean $1,850. So for me, even though I still had it in me as being sort of a workaholic type where I was still determined to do the best job, et cetera, and I still would bill in the area of 2,000 hours a year. That's still like working part-time if you've been like 3,000 hours a year.
That's true.
You know, it was really great for this place, but I still felt like I was only working part-time. So that, you know, that worked. And it was, I had my daughter, you know, within a couple of years, my first child within a couple of years of joining Greenberg Glusker. So I would say that for me, the real introspection about really about balance and what I wanted with my life came when my firm folded. It was a knock on the head.
a pretty good knock on the head.
It was
both positive and forceful.
Well, you know, it just forced me to look at myself and say, "Is this really what I want?" Because you know, it's very funny. At some point, a friend of mine, who's my best friend at the old firm, he and I were looking at each other. We were in my office and saying, "How can this be that we are both working so incredibly hard?" You know, and we figured it out. My number of hours that I worked at my old firm versus the salary that I was getting, which seemed enormous to me as a law student coming out of, you know, law school, et cetera. We actually figured it out per hour, and I was making less per hour at my old law firm than I was making as a research assistant at Stanford Law School.
Really?
Wait a minute, I'm going in the wrong direction. Oh, my God. This is not a good thing. Anyway.
Oh, boy. God. That's the thing. I think when you do the math, that's when you realize, maybe something is amiss.
Yeah, it's actually, that was eye-opening. That was, you know, shortly before my firm folded, but I have to tell you, that was, I was shocked and dismayed, to say the least.
Yeah, exactly, I'm sure. Well, at least, like you said, you got that sort of thump on the head to do that reevaluation, but when you had the forced upon you event in your life of making a major transition between firms. So at least you had that, but oh my goodness. I think that's the thing. Sometimes that overall number looks so lovely, you know, so good until we start doing the math about how many hours we're working to earn that number, and then reality strikes.
It is the one thing I believe that law students just don't understand. They don't understand when they're looking at a salary where one firm is going to pay you $30,000 more or $20,000 or $40,000 more. They don't understand that the difference between billing $1,850 and billing $2,800 or $2,500 is enormous in terms of your ability to actually have a life. It's enormous, that difference. And they look at the money and they say, wow, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. Wow, that's like so much money. Why would I go to a firm that's going to pay me that much less? But the truth of the matter is, you know, it's something that until they get out there and actually live it and experience it and slog through that work, and they're here at, you know, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and they run out of quarters and can't get a Diet Coke.
Oh, yes.
And they say to themselves, why am I doing this?
Right. Yeah, this is what I get paid those big bucks for, and I can't even enjoy it.
No, and I don't even have a Diet Coke to get me through the next hour that I need to be here.
That's right. Oh, goodness. I know. Yeah, that's a reality check, too, after all that. Yes. Because what are you really earning the money? I mean, you can't go on vacation, can't go out to dinner, can't do anything, and you've got maybe a nice bank account balance, but what kind of quality of life is there?
Exactly, and do you want to keep doing that for the rest of your life?
Exactly. Oh, wonderful. Well, thank you for sharing that part of your journey and that moment, it sounds like, in your professional career especially, where a change was thrust upon you and it gave you opportunity to do some thinking about what you actually wanted your career to look like and an opportunity to move into a position where you could create that and advocate for that for yourself. So, Bonnie, what would you say then, kind of jumping off from there, in your career and in your personal life, what has been your biggest challenge or struggle as you've attempted to navigate putting together a balance or an integration of your work and your life that is satisfactory to you and fulfilling to you? What's been your biggest challenge or struggle?
You know, I think that the biggest struggle for most women professionals, but particularly women lawyers, is the struggle for a personal work balance. And it continues to happen on every level, whether you're moving up through the partner ranks, or you're just starting out, or you're, you know, moving laterally, et cetera. I mean, the problem is finding the right balance without losing yourself as an individual in the midst. Because what happens as you get older, as you become a partner, you do have other people that are doing a little more of the grunt work for you, and so you can pass things down. But typically what happens is then you start having kids. And now, I mean, for better or for worse, I find that women, no matter how liberal their husbands are or how open-minded they are, we typically still run the family, and if we don't run it, it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, if we don't make the vacation plans, nobody's going anywhere.
That's right.
God rest at home. Mm-hmm. And so what ends up happening once you have kids is that now you really have two full-time jobs. You have your full-time job at work, and you have your full-time job running your household, because once you throw kids into the mix, the demands on your time are enormous. You know, for me, the biggest struggle is where do I personally fit in? Because obviously I didn't get to this point in my career simply focusing on work. I mean, I actually had a life before I had kids. I loved to play tennis, and I was very involved in music and, you know, all kinds of fun things. And I have to say that even though I came to a firm that allowed me to have a life more than I did at my prior firm, that once I threw kids into that mix, you know, I've got work, I've got kids. And you start prioritizing. So it's kids, it's work, it's husband, and there's no time for you. None. Zero. Remember some of that time that you got to go play tennis or just go have a facial or, you know, whatever you did. That time ends up falling to the very bottom of the barrel. And so it becomes harder, for example, to exercise regularly. Now, I have to say, you know, again, life is a process, and my kids are now getting older, and they don't need me as much. And therefore, the time that I don't have to spend handling their issues, I actually have more time now, as old as I am, to start, again, having a little bit more of a life for myself. Mm-hmm. And I have tried in reaching this balance, which I find very, very challenging, I have tried to be selfish about that time and say, you know what, I'm not going to give that time away to do more work. And I'm not going to give that time away to do, you know, now to first do, like, volunteer things for the kids' schools and stuff like that, because obviously as a full-time working parent, I didn't do a lot of volunteer work at the school. I didn't have time. Mm-hmm. But now that I'm starting to get time, I just don't actually want to give it away to other people. I actually want to carve out some time for myself.
Right.
It's really hard to find that balance in everything you do. And to me, that is the absolute biggest challenge. pardon me. I know that some women have opted to do the part-time thing. I never did. It would never, that could not work for me, because I love what I do way too much to do it just part-time. You don't, you know, when you're working part-time, you don't get the same kinds of opportunities, at least in litigation, that you do when you're full-time. You don't get the most exciting cases. You don't get to really run with them because, unfortunately, the practice of law, and particularly litigation, is demanding, and it doesn't really have time boundaries. See, you can't say, I'm only going to litigate on Monday, Tuesdays, and Thursdays.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Things don't happen that way. And so if you can't be flexible with that time, you don't get the best, most high-profile, most exciting, most demanding cases. And for me, that is a very important part of who I am. I love my work. If if I won the lottery tomorrow, I would come back to work the next day because I love what I do so much. So it's not a question for me of really pulling back from a full-time position. It just wasn't an option for me.
I think it's great that you're being so honest about that and having an honest conversation about the options, because there are a lot of options, or at least a growing number of options for women attorneys, and even in some of the interviews I've done with other attorneys who have gone part-time or said, well, be sure if the choice comes down to being full-time or leaving completely, go part-time to keep your foot in the door, or women who have started their own firms. And I think these are all very valid options, but they each do come with positives and negatives, with wonderful benefits and also with some challenges or some drawbacks. And you've articulated one that does go with a drawback that goes with maybe going part-time. While that works for some women and the choice they make to be maybe home with children part-time and working part-time, in your practice, it does mean that if you had chosen that path, you would have probably missed out on some of the more exciting cases, some of the things that really just jazz you in your practice, and you can tell just listening how much you love what you do, you might have missed out on some of that. So I think it's wonderful and refreshing to have an honest conversation about what those pros and cons are to each of the options so that a woman attorney who's considering them really knows what's on the table.
Yeah, it's, you know, at least in what I do, entertainment litigation, the stakes are just too high, too intense, too known to the world immediately. Mm-hmm. if you've made a mistake or you're not there, you must be ready to do battle at all times, at all hours. Mm. And it doesn't have these time constraints. It just doesn't. And so if you need time constraints, this is not what you should be doing. Mm-hmm. You need to find something else to do. And that wasn't an option for me. I love this too much. I just couldn't. I would resent my kids mm-hmm. and my family if they said, no, you know, you can only work part-time or whatever. That would bother me too much. I would feel like somebody's taking away a choice of mine, and I just couldn't do it.
I think that's another great point when you say you would resent your kids or your family, to be aware of that's something that is very likely that could come up if we felt forced into giving something up professionally that is so meaningful, is so fulfilling, that we enjoy so much. When we sort of take one for the team, so to speak, there's always that potential that there'll be resentment that will harbor a little bit of that, even subconsciously. But do we really want that, too? And I think that's a factor we also need to consider.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, sort of the flip side of that last question in terms of the biggest challenge and talking about finding that balance, which is such a struggle, and I also, and maybe we'll come back to it, but I love what you were saying about taking time away for self-care and putting some boundaries around the time that you have set aside, because I think we do always put ourselves at the bottom of that totem pole and everything seems to come first, and then, oh, but maybe I'll get to go play tennis, you know, once every 3 months or something, instead of carving out time for ourselves once in a while and not feeling guilty about it. So I just wanted to highlight that. I thought it was a great point.
We are women. That's what women do. We have been socialized to take care of everybody else first. And it is part of, you know, our culture and who we are. And I don't think it's not even our culture. I see it, you know, when I read about women all over the world, our job is to take care of everybody else and be very self-sacrificing. And it's something that I think we just do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, you just get tired running on all cylinders all the time for all people. And you know, when you get to be my age, you start saying, you know, boy, it would be so much better if I actually were a little more physically fit.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be a good thing? Remember those days when I could actually run 10 miles? Well, I can't anymore. Wouldn't it be great if I could go out and run every morning?
Yeah.
So anyway, I think it's a very important factor, which takes different levels of precedence in your life depending on what's going on.
And yet, say physical fitness as an example, there's really only one way to get physically fit, and it requires some time.
And no one else can do it for you.
And no one else. You can't delegate it. You can't hire it out. You know.
No. You just gotta do it yourself.
So there's those things too that if you don't make the time to do it yourself, it's not going to get done. And then, you know, what's the long term repercussion of that? You know, in terms of physical fitness, feeling mentally and physically sharp, you know, having a body that you feel good about. I mean, there are consequences to that too. So being mindful of that as we prioritize our time. There's only so many hours in the day, but if we're looking to have that physical fitness or, you know, feel good about ourselves, we have to figure out how to fit that in.
Exactly.
All right, so and we were moving in, and then I moved us back to self-care because I just thought it was a really good point that you had made. So I was trying to ask you before I diverted myself, your biggest lesson along the way, what would you say has been your biggest lesson that you've learned that's helped you figure out how to navigate some of these personal and professional balance struggles?
The most important lesson and skill that I've learned is to let go of control over certain things, which goes with setting priorities. So I also happen to be a neat freak. Well, if you come to my house now, you will see my house is just not all that neat, okay? I've delegated that, and the truth of the matter is if I decide that I really want my house really neat and clean like I want it, the truth is I will have to spend an hour or two every night after everybody else has gone to bed and clean myself, clean everything. And, you know, at some point you just say, okay, I'm actually not going to do that. I'm going to let go. I come home. I see that there are papers all over the table, and I say, okay, it's okay. I'm going to leave them. I'm just going to leave the papers because I do not want to spend an hour of time going through everything and organizing everything and cleaning it. And there are other things like that. You just have to let go. For the most part, women that are successful, particularly in the business world and particularly in the legal profession, we got here because we are self-driven, and we think, and most of the time it's true, we can do things a lot better than the people around us. I also firmly believe that in order to be a successful woman in a business setting, that we have to be twice as good, or lots more good in any case, than our male counterparts to be viewed as just equally as good. And therefore, we're kind of used to doing things better than other people, and than other, you know, particularly the men in our lives. And as a result, we want to control it because we look at something, we say, you know, I can do that better. I can clean that kitchen better, or I can pick out a better dress for my daughter, or, you know, I can actually write that brief initially better than if I had an associate do it, et cetera. You got to let go of some of these things. You've got to say, I'm going to delegate, and I'm going to keep my mouth shut about how it comes out.
Right.
I'm going to say thank you and move on. You know? And it's a hard lesson for most of us.
It is, because like you said, I think there are those very same tendencies and personality traits that got us into law school, that got us to where we are professionally, that are a little bit controlling and a little bit perfectionistic and very driven.
Absolutely. And the answer is you cannot do everything all the time. It's just impossible. You will die. You will collapse on your desk, head down, and you'll be gone. It's just not, you can't do that. You got to let go. You're not going to be perfect at everything.
I know. It's hard to hear and hard to accept, but when you do, it's like opening up a door of possibility when you can let go of a little bit of control and a little bit of perfectionism.
That's right.
So, Bonnie, then, from that, what would be two or three, or maybe distinct from that, what would be two or three tips or tools or strategies that you have found to be useful along your path, maybe practical ways of doing things, maybe a philosophy of just a way of thinking, but what are two or three things that you would like to pass along to the women who are listening or reading this interview that they might be able to put into practice in fairly short order?
Well, one of the most important things I learned early on was to prioritize all of the different tugs on my time, to decide what's the most important to me and to focus on those issues first, and then let other things fill in as I could do it. And some of the things that became less of a priority, that I decided were less of a priority as I got older, which were a very big priority for me in my early days, I've let go. I've delegated to other people. I don't have so much control over it. I push those things down. And I think you have to establish priorities. And those priorities, by the way, change as you get older, as other things happen in your life. The second thing for me, which was very critical, is flexibility. In order to work full-time and be a full-time mom at the same time, I have to have maximum flexibility from everybody I deal with. That's my husband, my kids, our hired help at home, my secretary, the people I work with here. I just need that maximum flexibility so that when I take a vacation, I need to take a vacation, but I am available on my cell phone and on my BlackBerry, mm-hmm. and my kids know I will try to minimize that. I don't sit at every restaurant and do my BlackBerry and my emails. But, if we're on vacation and we're riding in a train or we're riding in a car, they've got their headphones on or they're watching a movie or something, I'll go back and I will, spend 20, 30 minutes going through my emails and things like that so that I can keep up. By the same token, I expect that same flexibility at work. If my kids are in a show or they have a soccer game or whatever, I will say, okay, I'm going to be out for this part of the afternoon. I'm just going to be out. I've even actually told a judge who wanted to set a hearing on a particular day, and they were asking in court whether I could attend the hearing. I said to them, my son's actually testing for his karate, whatever color belt it was, mm-hmm. right at that time, and I just can't do it. Can we do it another time? And the judge was perfectly okay with it. And it was a male judge, and he was perfectly okay with it. I have found that maintaining that flexibility has been very important. Actually, it's sort of funny, but both of my kids were born early, a month early, and unexpectedly. Of course, I wasn't done with all my work.
Right.
I hadn't really transitioned. So I actually worked from the labor and delivery room, getting things off my desk, making calls to people and saying, okay, I'm not going to be in. You got to handle this. But again, that kind of flexibility of other people around you filling in those gaps is very important. And I would say that the third really important factor that I've learned over the years is to always maintain your sense of humor. Mm. There's nothing that's going to go wrong that you can't find something to laugh about, because and it's true for me both at work and at home, that you just have to be able to say, okay, let's just not take ourselves or other people all that seriously. Let's just find a way to, be able to laugh at ourselves.
Sometimes that's all you can do.
It sometimes is.
I said sometimes I'm either going to laugh or I'm going to cry. Laughing's a little more fun.
Exactly. And it just makes you feel better, and you get some perspective on whatever bad is happening.
Yes.
So, for those three things have over the years at least helped me keep everything in perspective.
That's great. Well, and they're three very distinct but all very important ways that we can improve how we're showing up personally and in our careers in terms of prioritizing and hoping for and giving that flexibility, and then when all else fails, just laughing a little, or
oh, yeah,
finding the humor, because it's sometimes the sanity saver.
Oh, boy. I hear you there.
Well, Bonnie, as we sort of wrap up our conversation here this afternoon, I'm wondering if you could share either a website or a place where women lawyers who are listening or this information could connect with you, be that an email or services you offer. Just tell us a little bit more of where people could find out more about you.
You can go to our website at greenbergglusker.com, and that's G-R-E-E-N-B-E-R-G, Glusker, G-L-U-S-K-E-R.com. And that's all one, you know, no spaces, all little letters or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Great. You know, you can click on my email, all these newfangled things. There's a picture, there's stuff about me, and you click on the email, it brings you right through. I mean, it's all kinds of stuff on that website.
Wonderful. Well, Bonnie, I am so deeply appreciative of you taking your time today to spend giving this information and advice, and your lovely sense of humor, your wit and wisdom, and sharing parts of your journey that will serve as a role model to other women out there who are trying to find that balance between their personal and professional lives. And also, just one thing that really struck me is how much you love the work you're doing, and I think that makes so much of a difference as well.
I do love what I'm doing. I will do this until the day I die. I just love what I do so much. For me, it's a gift to be able to do it, and I appreciate all of the hard work and effort and door opening that came before me by other women lawyers to allow me to get to this place.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important to share our knowledge as women to allow other women to follow their dreams and decide what's right for them.
Excellent. Perfectly said. And that's what you've done by spending this time, which is so generous of you. And I, again, I'm so thankful because, as you said, you've shared your wisdom, shared your experience and your journey, and that will allow other women to maybe do something different in their careers that makes them more meaningful or helps them find a better, more satisfactory way to balance their careers and their lives. So thank you so much, Bonnie.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, with that, we will end this conversation. And until next time, this is Kendra Brodeen, founder and CEO of WomenLawyersOnline.com. Signing off and wishing you real success always and in all ways. Thank you for being with us today. Bye-bye.